Hello, Mighty Warrior. I want you to be brutally honest with yourself for just 1 minute. When you hear the word sex, does it make you feel excitement or shame? Do you think God or guilt? Does sex make you think of ways to draw closer to your wife or how to hide your sins from your wife? Does sex make you think about purity or porn? Love or lust? When it comes to sex, lust, or porn, most men, or maybe you, struggle with walking in sexual purity and integrity. Have you tried everything you can think of to control the urge to watch porn, lust after women, or masturbate? Things like adding filters to your computer and your smartphone, getting counseling, attending recovery groups, praying and fasting, abstaining from social media, and believe it or not, even getting married. And many of these things do work as a short-term solution, but it doesn't get to the root of a man's real problem, his identity and his authority in Christ. Now, as a born-again Christian who's also a 15-year recovering porn and sex addict, I knew there had to be a better, long-term solution to man's lifelong battle with lust and porn. And we found it. It's our one-on-one private Life Over Lust 30-day intervention. It's a unique, personalized, intensive program where I virtually walk side-by-side with you in sexual integrity for 30 days. That's right, for 30 consecutive days. I will do life with you by intentionally, strategically, and methodically taking you through a proven structured process to help you break free from sexual sin. However, because of the highly personalized nature of this program and my time commitment, there is a cost, and it's not cheap. And I can only take on 2 men at a time. No more, no exceptions. And you have to complete an application and be accepted first before I can take you on as a client. Now, I know this program isn't for everyone, and every man won't be able to participate. But if you're tired of losing a battle with lust, getting punked by porn, and surrendering to sexual temptation, personally email me at joe@realmenconnect.com to request an application and an interview. That's Joe, J-O-E, at realmenconnect.com.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. And each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. And guys, today we have with us my guest, Derek Stone. And after working to support his family as a struggling artist, Derek Stone chose to reevaluate his life and his way of thinking. And in 3 short years, he grew a small one-man show into a million-dollar company. And this amazing transformation came about through a decision to forgive his father. And Derek left a path of blame and began to travel down a path of forgiveness, which led him to start living his best life. And he's now on a mission to help empower others to make the same transformation by helping them take charge of their own lives. And guys, we invited Derek Stone to join us on the Real Men Connect podcast to talk to us about a common theme that's been appearing in a lot of our shows lately. And it's about forgiveness and learning to heal from our past. And I love having guests on who are willing to get down and dirty and real about dealing with the pain of their past and the hurts in their hearts. Because when we do, there's healing on the other side of it. So I'm super excited to have Derek Stone on the show today to share his story, talk about his successes as well as his struggles as it relates to forgiveness. So with that being said, please welcome my guest, Derek Stone, to the Real Men Connect podcast. Thanks for joining us, Derek.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Joe.
You know, Derek, I told you, as I mentioned in the intro, that we deal with a lot of men who deal with a lot of hurts. And typically these hurts come from a very traumatic past in childhood. And so this topic is, you know, I think we can never get tired of discussing this. We've discussed it in so many different ways, and we've talked about forgiveness in the past and everything. So I can't wait to talk to you about it, to get a different perspective, because I think men need to hear it. And the more I think they hear it, the more they'll start to believe it. And if they believe it, maybe they'll start walking in it. But Derek, as we always do when we start our show, we always ask our guests their favorite Bible verse from the Word of God that gives them inspiration. And I would love to find out, what is yours, man? What's your favorite Bible verse? Maybe in this season, maybe for your life. What is it?
Currently, it's and it's been for a while, Deuteronomy 30:19. It says, I call all heaven and all earth together as a witness against you that you would choose life, and that it may go well with you and your descendants. And that's what he said, I lay before you blessing and curses. And that you would choose life, that it may go well with you and your descendants. To me, I just replay that every day when I try to make decisions. Like, okay, what's the blessing in this? What's the curse in this? Let's just make a decision and let's just pray to make it right. You know.
You know, Derek, it's so funny to me that we now, on by the time your show airs, we're over 440 something episodes. And we've grown a massive audience. But check this out, man. And you think out of all those shows that we do, that when I ask the question about their favorite Bible verse, I'll start hearing the same ones kind of over and over again. I am always surprised and shocked when I hear one, you know, always hear these new ones. Do you realize? And I know that verse. I've never had anyone share that verse before, which is amazing. Awesome. And so I want to know, I know you just said, but tell me why in particular that verse, how did that verse come to you that became your verse for the season?
It came to me as a younger teen, an older teen, my 18, 19. And it was just how you make decisions. You know, it's like so much God. Yeah. We have free will. Right. And in that, you know, God gives us a choice. He lays that choice before us. Every day we have a choice. You know, we get up and how we spend our life, what we spend our life doing. And I just want to make the best choices I can. Why? Well, I want to benefit my family the best way I can. I want to love my wife the best way I can. I want to be the best father I can. And so I'm always trying to look at other people's perspectives. I'm always trying to look at the decisions I make. What's the goal? And I use the goal as a filter to run all the decisions through. Is this going to help my goal or is this going to hurt my goal? And I just found that as a young kid that I just think that, man, you know, God gives us choices. And we, the outcome of those choices are a result. And if you don't like the results you get, you know, you got to go change your thinking, your thoughts, feelings, and actions that gave you that result. You got to go change them to get a different result. And sometimes that's seeking wisdom. Sometimes that's going and find somebody else's life who you admire and you go model their life. In their situation, and so the best you can. And, you just, Andy Andrews, favorite writer of mine, his book, The Traveler's Gift, changed my world. And in his book, he says, you know, you can, if you hang out with chickens, you learn to scratch and peck at the ground and squabble over crumbs. But if you hang out with eagles, you learn to soar to great heights. And to me, that's got everything to do with choice and example and, just the power that God gives us in free will.
You know, I had the pleasure of meeting Andy Andrews over two decades ago. It's been a long time. And it's before he was as big as he is. I had no idea when I met that dude that he was going to grow into that kind of author. But even then, he was talking about some of his ideas and his vision. We were part of this huge mastermind group. And so I met him when he was getting started. And to see what he's done and the impact that he's reached, I heard a lot of men quote him and love his book. His book has been life transforming for them. And when you're saying about choices, I love that. And this is great for the topic we're talking about, choosing to forgive. My son and I have a 24-year-old son, and we're going through a book together called Atomic Habits. It's not a Christian-based book, but it's a wonderful book on how to develop self-discipline and habits, practical way of doing it. And one of the things it said in the book, and my son and I, now we use this every time we talk to each other, when we're going to say, this is what we're going to do, or something just happened, what are we going to do next? In the book, I think it's Robert Clear, but I know his last name is Clear. He said that, he says, every choice you make is either a vote for the person you want to become, or it's not. And so when my son says he's going to do something, I say, Kendall, is that a vote for the person you want to become or against the person you want to become? And every time it just stops, no, Dad. I say, well, make a vote towards the person you want to become. And you're right. Everything is about a choice. But so let's transition, Derek, shall we, man? Sure. You mentioned about this came to you, this Bible verse, when you were a late teen and like around 18, around that age. Tell us a little bit about your story. Every man has a story. So what was it like growing up as a little Derek as a kid? Tell me a little bit about your story, man.
So my parents were divorced when I was five. And my mom moved us from Ocean Springs, Mississippi to Mobile, Alabama. And we were living with my aunt at the time. And then on every other weekend, my dad would come get us and take us to Gulfport, Mississippi. And then in the summer times, we'd spend two summers with my grandmother and grandfather, who both just passed here recently. And then we go to and then after that, my mom was just trying to figure things out and ended up moving us into which she wanted our own place. And she ended up moving us into a Section 8 house. It's a project neighborhood off Dauphin Island Parkway in Mobile, Alabama. And I tell you, there was always, it's just like a typical neighborhood. You got to put your foot down and tell people you're not going to be ran over. You know, there's probably more than 10 fights I got into. I probably lost two, but I had brothers. I had brothers. So I was a pretty good fighter if I had to be. So then my mom got married to a guy in that neighborhood, and being vulnerable, the guy had started sexually abusing us at from 8 to 12 years old. And then when my mom finally realized what was going on, she divorced him and that kind of thing. And I never told anybody because, you know, for one, he said that if you tell anybody, you know, they're going to take you away from your mom. And I love my mom. My little 8-year-old brain was like, I don't want to be taken away from my mom. What the heck, you know? And so, we moved to Tupelo, Mississippi going into my junior year of high school. And I thought I was going to be the same guy. I was running from God. I'd got sexually involved with a woman that was a girl that was 3 years older than I was. I'm 15. got on every drug I could find. I was just trying to hide it, living behind the facade and trying to keep the facade up that everything is okay. Everything's good. I was a guy looking for a party, looking for a place to happen. When I moved into the transition that happened to me when we moved to Tupelo, Mississippi, about 3 weeks before school started, I had it in my head I was going to be the same guy. And this voice came to me audibly. I believe it was God or Holy Spirit, whichever you want to believe. But people think I'm crazy when I hear this. I've only heard this voice three times audibly. It said, this is a new start for you. You're not going to screw this up. And so I unpacked a box that I hadn't unpacked yet. We'd been there all summer. And that box had my Bible in it. And I pulled it out and started reading. I cleaned my act up within about 3 days. I stopped cussing, stopped drinking. And everybody in the house was kind of like, oh, goody two shoes, you know, and because they saw an immediate change is an immediate change. And so, then the first day of school happened. I realized what happened. The first day of school, this dude jumped out of nowhere. His name was Will Davis. And he said, dude, do you love Jesus? And I was like, this is crazy. But yeah, I mean, and he took me to a football game that night. And then that Sunday, he took me to church. And then that night I was in a small group. And I just realized that I believed in God enough and knew God enough, well enough, that I said, this is exactly where you want me. And I opened my arms up, like physically opened my arms up and said, use me and make me the man you want me to be. And that's been happening ever since.
You know, I tell you, as you're going through your story, Derek, believe it or not, I'm familiar with all those areas that you mentioned that you grew up in. And I didn't tell you before we came on the show that I did my undergrad at the University of West Florida in Pensacola. So I'm very familiar with Mobile, Gulfport, Mississippi, Tupelo, Mississippi, all those areas. And I'm thinking, wow, what a small world that I know that area very intimately. I spent a lot of years in that area and also met a lot of students, as you can imagine, living in Pensacola from those surrounding areas. But as you talk about your story and you mentioned about your mom's boyfriend, did she ever marry that man?
Yes, they were married for about 2 years and got a divorce.
Wow. And so you never told her about what happened? Have you ever mentioned it to her?
Oh, she knows. Yeah, she knows now. Yeah.
Now, when did you tell her?
My twin brother and I moved to going into eighth grade, we moved to my dad's in Texas. My dad had moved to Texas in sixth grade, so I never saw him ever again on every other weekend like we had been seeing him. I only saw him now once the summer, and so, which was only twice. And that second time we were like, you know, we want to go try to live with dad. We knew we had the option. So we just told her and asked her, and she's like, yeah, I'm not going to hold you back from, you know, being with your dad. So we went and lived with my dad, and she called me one day the middle of that year and had found out from a couple other people in the neighborhood and called me crying one day. And she said, are you at your dad's because this happened? And I said, yes. We told her, yes, this is what happened.
Wow. And he had abused other children too as well, right?
Yes.
All right. And again, Derek, I tell you, it's such a small world. I'm a victim and survivor. Let's put it this way. I'm a survivor of sexual abuse. And also about the same time frame you mentioned, you said about 3 or 4 years? It went on. Yeah, it was about the same for me, 3 years that it went on. But it was a family member. And so did your mom know this before she married him? She didn't know this. You didn't tell her even before she married the man.
Because he was living with us at the time.
Wow. Wow. And so she married him not knowing this about him.
Right.
Is that correct? And there's so much to unpack here. We talk about forgiveness. And there's so many things I want to ask you there. That's why I love the Holy Spirit and how I have my plan and have my questions out, what I'm going to ask. And then I hear the guest and like the Holy Spirit said, no, go here, go there, ask about this. Because I know there's some man that we're speaking to right now. And we're going to park here for a second as we transition and talk about forgiveness. But I'm seeing a lot of things here. And I want to, even when you say that you heard this voice from God and turn your life around, my question to you, because a lot of us have similar stories to that we went to, we got on that road to Damascus and all of a sudden we had to choose, like you said, choose death or choose life. But even when we make that choice, based on, it doesn't erase what happened to us in the past. How did you learn to trust men again after what happened with this guy? Because I know I struggle with that a lot myself, thinking I can't trust any man at all.
Well, and I feel you. And to be quite honest, it goes even deeper than that, because when I was 14, I believe, I was starting to get my learner's permit. And no, actually I was 15, because it happens 7 months before I moved from Mississippi from Mobile to Tupelo. And that's why I started running, was the fact that I was one of these Wednesday Christians, man. I go to church at youth group at Wednesday night. Youth group was a happening place to go. And some guys around the neighborhood, the youth pastor found out what happened to me. And this is a horrible story. And he asked me for a counseling session. So I was like, all right, cool, man. And he asked me what happened. He asked me why I never told. And I told him. So he invites a bunch of guys over to his house and for a game night, pizza and stuff. And we're like, yeah, that sounds like a good time. So tell my mom, hey, we're going to stay in that youth pastor. Youth pastor's like, all right, cool. Well, I got there and a couple guys came and went. Nobody was staying like they said, except me. I was the only guy that stayed. So he came into the room in the middle of the night and proceeded to do the same stuff. And oh, man, I'm telling you, man, I ran. And that's why I ran, because I was like, God, who are you? And if you have people in your church doing this, I don't want nothing to do with you. And that's what made me run. And that's one of the reasons I had a girl I got involved with. I had, you know, the drugs I got into and drinking and everything like that. It was just really just hiding the pain, because I was so I was so blown away. And so moving past that it was really hard for me to really just trust the church even. But then when I met Will, there was something about him that the dude was just magnetic. And I love that guy to this day, man. And he was just so magnetic. And
he's a student. He's your age, or is this a teacher?
He was my age. He was a student.
Okay.
He was a student.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
And when I met his crowd, man, all these guys were just wholesome, just authentic people, and just not doing shady stuff. Like so many times, that's all I grew up around in the hood. You know, I call it the hood. But there's just all these, and that's what made me let my guard down, was that these guys were so different from anybody else I'd ever seen, that, and these were godly men. And what happened was, the youth pastor I was at, who started doing some training under Neil T. Anderson and Dave Parks. And they wrote a book together called The Bondage Breaker.
Yeah, well, I've read it. Yeah.
They did a Bondage Breaker conference in my senior year, and our youth pastor was heading it up with several other churches. And this is the, if you don't mind me going this kind of this direction.
No, go right ahead.
This is kind of how the forgiveness happened. Because I was an angry, bitter dude, man. I'm not gonna lie. I was angry.
No joke.
I was bitter. I was mad.
Of course.
And living behind a facade, though. You know, it was like I was angry and bitter and mad inside, but yet I was living on the surface. I was, you know, like I said, party looking for a place to happen, and just everything was all right. And so I went to this conference, and the dude started talking about Dave Parks started talking about forgiveness, and he said, you know, bitterness versus forgiveness, and how that plays, how they are two different sides of the coin there. And he said, some of you need to forgive a parent or a sibling or a grandparent or, you know, and my heart started to pound, my fence clenched up. And I literally, Joe, I almost walked out. And and then that voice, second time I heard it came back to me and said, Derek, I want to use you, but you have so much bitterness towards your dad. I can't. And I need you to forgive your dad. And boy, I just I screamed like inside my head, like, why should I forgive him? You know, because he wasn't around. I felt like it was his job to protect us from this stuff. Because he wasn't around, you know, this happened. I was abused because he wasn't around or didn't pay child support. You know, we didn't know where next meal was coming from, or the lights got cut off and we were taking cold showers and candlelight, you know. And so, so it was just so frustrating. And then that voice came back to me and said, but I'm the father to the fatherless. And I wanted to know what that was like so bad for somebody to tell me that I had what it took and that I was enough. And, that I said, God, I want to know what that's like so bad. I'll give you this if you give me that. And, that's what I did. 2 hours later, just gut-wrenching crying and being broken. I don't know if any of you men out there have ever experienced that, but this was for real, like dry heaving crying. I mean, it was crazy. And when I got up, though, the burden on, you know, and I no longer felt the need to live behind this facade. I felt like I could live just me, just be me, and to figure out what that was. And what was really cool is that God was already working with those five men. There's five families that I got kind of put into that, man. I saw how they resolved conflict with their spouses. I saw how they were business owners, purchases they made and how they made those decisions, how they ran their businesses, how they disciplined their kids, how they were contributing members to society and to the church, and how they empowered people and believed in people and their influence. I saw all this stuff, and it was just all these different examples. And, I mean, one guy that just comes to my head, Greg Barber, man, that guy's like a dad, you know, to me as well. And he showed me how to, I'm a deer hunter, and he showed me how to go scout around and get in the right spot. And then on opening day, I killed my first deer, and he actually showed up. He showed up and showed me how to quarter it all out and how to pack it and what to do with it. And I mean, who does that? Who takes time out of their schedule and does that, you know? And so, super grateful for these guys that I don't even know if they listened to a call from God to invest in this kid, you know, or if they were just like, yo, he doesn't have anybody else. I don't know if they felt sorry for me. Well, I have no idea, but to this day, I'm super grateful because God put them in my life to show me what it was like to have somebody that says you're enough. You have what it takes.
You know, Derek, I tell you, our stories are so overlapping and have so much in common. And every time I get a guest on like this, again, we're on a Zoom call and they're listening to this on a podcast, so they don't see that we see each other. And it just amazes me. And it makes me mad at the enemy because we're from two different generations. We're two different ethnic groups. You grew up, in talking about pretty much Alabama and I call it the Bible Belt, where I grew up in Miami and the projects in Liberty City in Miami. But yet our stories are so similar. And this is when I get mad at the enemy. Men who are struggling with what you're talking about, unforgiveness, being sexually abused, betrayed trust, church hurt, because you're talking about on a different level when a person from church who you confide in, you tell, and then he does the exact same thing. And but yet the enemy will have us believe no one can relate to you, Derek. You're the only one. And when we get together like this and we talk about it and we share about it, and I bring all these men on the show, that's why I'm hoping that the man who's listening to this, he will stop believing the lie that he's a unicorn. God is picking on him. God is punishing him, like that he's not enough, that he should be ashamed. He will be rejected. He will be hurt. Because as you're sharing this, Derek, I'm taking notes and right now things you're mentioning. And I wrote this down just to myself, that it seems to me that it appears that one man can seem to destroy a life, who with their own hurts, their own trauma, their own insecurities, their own abuse, that they can take out the life of another person because of their hurting. But then at the same time, all it takes, based on what you shared, is one godly man to change everything and open up the floodgates. And then what we see is that, no, the world is not that person who abused us, who hurt us, who betrayed us, who abandoned us in your father's case, or what you perceived as abandonment. It's not that. No, the world is not filled with people like that. There's also people, a lot of people, if you can meet just one, they can introduce you to others and it can change your whole perspective on life. And that's what I'm hearing through your story. And so I see now.
Can I take that a step?
Sure, go right ahead.
Can I take that a step further? Because like, I feel like I need to tell this story for the guys out there that, listen, one of the main things that paralyzed me that I always wanted to tell somebody something. I just wanted to tell somebody to get it off my chest at least. But every time I felt like I had the what it took to tell somebody, in my head, I don't know how this happened, but it was, I believe firmly it was the enemy, but in my head, I was transformed into this courtroom and I was on the witness and I had to relive every one of those moments. But not only did I have to relive every one of those moments, I saw all the crowd. And not only did I see all the crowd, I could hear what they were thinking and what they were saying in my head. And it was all accusations. You brought this on yourself. You deserve this. You know, and all this. And I'm just thinking like, and I'd shut up. I just paralyzed. I paralyzed. I never say anything to anybody. And so, and that's what happens is the moment you start to tell people your healing starts to take place, man. I mean, that's what happened to me. The moment I started telling people and talking openly about it, you know, and being authentic. I mean, you're not going to tell everybody, don't cast your pearls to the swine, obviously, but get in a situation where you trust somebody and you can say some stuff. And what I'm realizing is that I went through a valley, and what I've done with my book is built a bridge across that valley. And it's easier to cross the valley by going over a bridge someone else built.
Right. Right. You know, I have a saying that you can't trust everybody, but you're going to have to trust somebody. God is a relational God. He built us to relate, not to isolate. And he's going to put godly people in your life. He has a ram in the thicket for you if we can press through. You know, and we're going to dive a little bit more into forgiveness, because, I mean, there's so many questions I can ask you and so many, I guess, bruises and scars and cuts that you received as a kid. And one of the questions I was going to ask you, you've already explained it, is why were you blaming your dad for all this? Because I, you know, and I say that tongue in cheek, because I did the same thing, because he left when I was two and he wasn't there to protect me from the abuser. He wasn't there to protect me even from my mom's struggles that she was having as a woman. My mom was a teenage mother when she had me at 16, and we lived in public housing and had to deal with severe poverty, and my dad never provided and took care of us to do it. And so I blamed him a lot for it. And so you explained why you blame your dad. So let me ask you a more broad question. Why do you think they thought forgiveness mattered so much when they told you to do that? You went almost ballistic when they told you you're going to have to forgive your father and forgive a parent, and you lost it. Why do you think it was so important to do that now in hindsight?
Well, I mean, gosh, I mean, like I said, when I was on my knees, not only was I forgiving my dad, anybody that came to my heart, to my mind, I just voiced their name and I forgive this person. I forgive that person. I forgive this person, the abuser, the other abuser, the, you know, my mom, for she just didn't know. And people out there, man, just know that your parents do the best they can with what they have and based on the examples that they've been shown. So if you don't like who you are because of how your parents raised you, then it's up to you to change it. And I know that I say that in love, but it's up to you to change it. And for me, it was so empowering to forgive, because what happened was I didn't have to live behind this facade no more. And the burden that just weighed my life down, which was fueling that anger and resentment, was just not there anymore. It literally just wasn't there anymore. I felt so free. And so many times when we hold that anger and resentment and bitterness, we lock ourselves in a prison of torment. Because when the disciples asked Jesus how to pray, he said the prayer, and then he said, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass us." So many people forget that "as we" part. That "as we" part. Forgive those who trespass against us as we forgive those who trespass against us. Man, it's kind of like, so you're telling me that we're forgiven based on how we forgive others? And it's kind of like this, if you put this mental picture in your head, like when God looks down at me, he sees Jesus on the cross. And I'm on the other side of that, thank God, you know. And so much of it's a choice. It is a choice. And it's a, that's it. It's a choice that we have to make. And it unlocks that prison cell of torment that we put ourselves in.
You know what, Derek, as you say that, I think about what I often say to men when they hear stories like yours, they hear testimonies like mine and what we've been through and what we've had to overcome and survive. And I said, and they feel sad, you know, because my heart broke when you told me, especially the second time when the guy from the church would do that. It breaks my heart to hear that. And so when I feel that sadness, or when they feel that sadness by hearing my story, I tell them, I say, yes, now understand that explains me. It explains me, but it doesn't excuse me from making choices now to heal. And we often think, I know when people always ask me, did you forgive your abuser? Did you forgive your dad? Did you forgive your mom? And I said, yes. And they said, man, was it tough? Was it hard? I said, yeah, initially, until I realized that we keep thinking that forgiving someone is giving them like a free pass, giving them a, you know what I mean? It's a gift to them. And I realize now that it really is not a gift to them. It may be perceived that way, but I look at it, and I could be wrong on this, Derek. To me, what it's, at least has been for me in my life, forgiveness is a gift God gives me to give to myself. So by me forgiving my abuser, forgiving my dad, forgiving my mom, forgiving the people who hurt me, rejected me, or whatever, God is saying, I'm giving you this gift that you can give to yourself too, like you said there, to release yourself from prison. Because it's like you're in jail, but he's giving you the key to let yourself out anytime you choose. But you're getting ready to say something, Derek.
Yeah, I was just saying that when you say that about the gift, you know, it's so many times we try to hold our forgiveness as if it is a gift, and that we're waiting for people to be worthy to bestow
upon
them.
Right,
right. And it's not. It's true forgiveness is real forgiveness when you give it away freely. You know, and that's it. You know, 6 years I waited and prayed that God would restore the relationship between me and my dad. You know, I truly love my dad. And I really do. And our relationship is amazing now, 6 years. And one day I'm in the middle of the woods and he calls me up and says, hey, Derek, you know, I want to be in your family's life. I want to be in my grandkids' life. And I don't want to be known as somebody who walked out on their kids. And I want to ask you if you'll forgive me for the way I've treated you guys for the past 10 years. And I smiled, because see, I'm going to be honest, I was the only sibling of his kids that had probably dealt with it. And so I just smiled and said, Dad, I forgave you a long time ago, but I've been waiting for this day for a long time. You know, and man, we've been on hunting trips together. We've been on, you know, just hiking trips, you know, and stuff like that, and just kind of building a relationship. We've been out there several times. And so it's been real, real neat to see that too, that you can start over in some of your relationships. I would say that forgiveness and trust are not the same thing. So to the listeners out there, if you forgive somebody, that's one thing. But if you trust them again, and they turn around and do the same thing. They're abusing your forgiveness. And in that regard, I would seriously question not whether I had that person in my life. Were they building me up or tearing me down? And then I would set up a boundary to where they can't affect you in that regard. So, because forgiveness is for you, trust is for them.
Right, right. Derek, that is well said. The way I made the distinction, I said, yeah, forgiveness is something that we give away. It's a gift. You give it away. And it's also a gift for you to keep for yourself. But trust is earned.
Right.
Trust is built. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you have the right to say, you know what? I can forgive you, but you have to earn my trust. And the person, even the person you've forgiven, has to earn their trust, earn your trust back. But you know, you also mentioned something I thought was very interesting, and I really want to go back to it because I think this is important for that man out there who's listening. You had a great experience with your dad where he came back to you to say, son, will you forgive me? And you mentioned you got three other brothers, right? Three other siblings.
Two. Yeah. I have a twin brother and then an older brother. And
okay.
A sister.
Two other brothers, right? Mm-hmm. So it's two. Yeah. So in there, you know, you said that you're pretty much the one that your dad had a relationship with, but they are not so much.
And my oldest brother is pretty still bitter about it. He was affected the worst because he was 10 when the divorce happened. And then, you know, my twin brother, he has dealt with it. So my sister, she says she's dealt with it, but it still plays out in her life every day.
Right. And so now, and I want that man out there who's listening carefully to what I'm about to say. When you reach a point where Derek has reached and he's now he said, man, I'm going to forgive my dad. And at that time, your dad had not asked you for forgiving him. And so when he came back to you and told you that, you told him, dad, I'd already forgiven you, which was the truth. And what I want the man out there to hear and see, a lot of us think that, well, until my dad does that, until my abuser does that, that's when, oh, I'm willing to forgive Derek and Joe Martin, but you don't understand. I'm going to do it once they own what they did and they ask me to forgive them. And I'm telling them, and Derek, I want you to jump in. Don't you do that. Don't wait for hearing it from them. Because again, you're going to harbor bitterness. I still haven't heard those words from my dad, who I've forgiven and I love, and I have a great relationship with him. I don't need that to move on.
You're only hurting yourself.
You're only hurting yourself. So Derek, I want you to jump on and go back to that, because what do you say to that man who's thinking, okay, I will when he, what yeah. do you say to
you're,
him?
You're hurting yourself, because again, that's a decision you're making to keep yourself in that prison cell. And you're not forgiveness. You're not justifying what somebody did to you. You're allowing yourself to move on to a better place emotionally. Because at the point, you have to realize, who do you want to become? Who do you want to be? And what does that person look like? Define that. And then use that as a filter for every decision you make moving forward. And so, yeah, so many times, I mean, gosh, I could just tell you, I had this vision while I was running one day. And in this vision, you were in this like French cell, right? In this dirty prison cell, and everything complete with the leaking water. I mean, you're hearing it, bloop, you know, drip and everything. And you're in the cell. Well, then all of a sudden this person coming and is dressed in white. And it's like the light is following them through the hallway. Like the light coming down on top of them, following through the hallway, they're dressed in white. The closer you get, you start to stand up, and you know, you're kind of weak, and you stand up and you look at them and realize it's you. And that person hands you a key, and inscribed on the key, as you run your finger across it, says forgiveness. And then the keyhole lights up inside the door. The prison cell, you put the key in. All these people behind you in white on the other side of the door start appearing. And as you turn the key and open the door, they all start to disappear. It's you holding the key. It's making a choice to your own prison cell that you put yourself in. And a lot of the times people don't realize it, because when you play the victim mentality, woe is me. You know, but you don't know what I went through, but you don't know what I'm going through. You don't know what they did to me. You're right. I don't. And my friend, I'm going to be completely honest. I stopped writing this book for 2 years because when I tell people this, I was scared to death I was going to offend people. But it's one of those things where, like, look, it sucks what happened to you. It does. It should not have happened. You're right. But you got to get over it. If you want to get to that vision of your life that you want, you got to get over it and move on. And that is taking responsibility for your own life. Stop playing the victim and choosing to forgive and moving forward.
You know, Derek, I heard a poet, I'm talking about a live spoken word poet, at a poetry reading. She said, I'm going to see if I can recite it. This was years ago. I'm talking about at least 25 years ago, but I still remember it. She says, "I'm so angry. I'm so mad and I'm in a rage, but I didn't realize that God gave me the keys to my own cage." And that always stuck with me, that if I believe I'm trapped, I believe I'm in bondage, I believe that, and I'm upset and mad at the world, I kept hearing that says, but if God is who he says he is,
and he is,
then he's already given me the keys to my own cage. And now, and I'm sure you can say the same thing, Derek, I look back now and you know what I realized? I wish I would have forgiven sooner, because it wasn't until I was probably, I guess, 27 years old. And when I finally, this is when I had to forgive my dad and my mom, who passed away last year. But when she was there, when I was doing it, and I just broke down crying, and she says, "Baby, why are you crying?" I said, "Mama, 27 years. I said, I just felt like somebody just lifted a ton off my back." I said, but nobody did anything. I did something. And I felt the release. I said, "Mama, are you telling me I could have let this go a long time ago?" She says, "Yes, you could have." And I'm like, wow, unbelievable. So if I could go, I wish I would have done it a lot sooner, would have had to experience a lot less grief and misery for other people that I caused. Because isn't that interesting that the pain we're feeling and we're harboring bitterness and unforgiveness, because of that, as a result, we end up hurting others that we're going to have to ask them to forgive us for what we've done.
Right. You hurt the ones. That's what bitterness does. It manifests itself and hurts those you love the most. And because what happens in a lot of that is bitterness kind of tells you a lie that you're not enough, you know, and then "I'm not enough" turns into shame, and then shame turns into anger. And then anger is that you're going to lash out at the people that are nearest to you, closest to you. That's your kids. That's your wife, you know, and those people you love the most. You don't want to hurt them, and you don't want to cause this residual pain to lash out at them. So why are you holding on to it? You know?
No, Derek, I can't believe the time is flying by so fast. And I do want to get to the man up question. I think we may have a chance to hit that today, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to transition and we're going to get real practical about forgiveness. And if I can, I'm going to squeeze in a few questions for you. And let's get real practical with the men, because I think if they're listening to you right now, and you guys are listening to Derek Stone, who's the author of Why Should I Forgive? And we're talking about the subject of forgiveness, especially forgiving those who are closest to us, those who have abused us, those who mistreated us. And we're trying to give you some practical. They'll say, "Okay, Derek, I'm with you, bruh. I know I want to move on from this. I want to get to a healing place, but I just don't know how to do it." So let me ask you a few questions, just some quick ones. How do we truly forgive someone who's caused us so much pain in our lives? What does that look like practically for us if we're going to do it? What's that first step we need to take?
Well, one of the main things is going with your gut. If your heart is telling you need to forgive that person, you need to write the name down.
And then you need to
go to the next place, which is, you've got to take responsibility for your life and stop playing the victim, because the victim mentality, you're giving way too much power to the person that offended you. Every time you give them power by playing the victim, you're giving power over your life and your situation. And that's what I mean by, like, you got to take responsibility for your own life. So going with your gut, and I call this open heart surgery in my book, and it talks about how to make an informed and good decision, take responsibility for your own life, dealing with the self-critic and the cost of bitterness and then the waiting room. And then this is the next step to forgiveness for me. Once you write it down, you know you need to forgive that person. You have to surrender the outcome. And what I mean by that, if you guys will go back and read the story of Jehoshaphat, I know we're running out of time here, but the story of Jehoshaphat, one is that he surrendered. He said, "God, this is Israel's yours. why am I having to go fight it and defend it? This is your job. And God says, you know, you're absolutely right. And he goes out. But guess what Jehoshaphat did? He still had to go show up. He still had to go to the valley and watch the other three armies destroy themselves. You know, so he still had to show up. And at the end of the day, what that means for the surrender and the outcome is like, God, this is not my fight. This is your fight. And if it's revenge you seek, you got to trust that God is gonna take care of that person. You know what I'm saying? You need to say, God, you know what? It's not my place to take revenge. You're going to fight this battle for me. Because I do not control this person. This person controls themselves. So you can control that person. So surrendering the outcome is such a big part of that. And forgiveness for so many other people, man, is you have to mourn what could have been. And what that means. So say your innocence, man, what would my life be like today if I still had my innocence? If it wasn't stolen from me, what would my life be today if my father was there? What would my life be like today if my mother was straight, not on drugs or not drinking or whatever? What would my life be like today if I still had that girlfriend that hurt me so bad, or you know, I still had a child that maybe passed away? You have to mourn what could have been. And surrendering. And so when you mourn that, because true forgiveness happens, and so something has to die for true forgiveness to happen. That's why Jesus had to die. And before that, they were sacrificing lambs. So Jesus paid the price. So for something true forgiveness to happen, something has to die. And that is what could have been in your head. So what could have been?
You know, this is so good, Derek, and I want you to correct me if I misquote you, because I was writing down fast because I want them to catch these points, what you're saying, because now you're giving us practical steps to take and to deal with. And I'm going to follow with one last question where we go into the man up questions. But you said, and correct me if I misquote you on this, you said, first of all, we got to, you know, you can write it down, to capture it, take responsibility, surrender the outcome. Mourn what could have been, because you said, because for something has to die before it can be resurrected. It has to fall to the ground and die before it can grow again. So did I cover that? Did we leave out anything on that?
No, that's good.
So here's my last question before we get into the man of questions. Again, I'm always have a heart for that man out there who is still struggling with, I'm hearing you guys, but I want to do this, but man, you know, I'm tired of living this way, but so here's the question I want to answer for him. How do we get past the uncomfortableness of being vulnerable? He's basically saying, I don't think I can do it. I'm scared. Now, he may not want to admit it publicly, but in the inside, he's scared to do it. He's afraid, because he may have defined himself based on the bitterness, the resentment. He doesn't know who he's going to be if he released this. So how does he get past that uncomfortableness, being vulnerable and being open, that he can at least even take the first step to forgive?
I will tell you, a buddy of mine, Tommy Breedlove, he wrote the book Legendary. Good friend of mine, we're in a mastermind together, and he gave me this exercise one time, because I always had this fear of confrontation with people. Because in the past, when I grew up, when I confront people, it would always be, I'm right, you're wrong, and it end up in a fight. So I'm not that person anymore. So I always felt like when I tell somebody what I truly feel, it's always going to offend them. It's always going to lead to a fight. Well, so I just stopped telling people what I thought. He gave me this exercise for your men out there, and it's this exercise is those emotions and those feelings that tell you can't share somebody, or you've got to keep this a secret, or you can't let your wall down to get to a vulnerable place. Thank them. Thank those feelings, because they got you where you are today. Thank them, and then proceed to write them down and say, I no longer need you. Thank you for getting me here. Thank you for getting me here. I no longer need you. And become the man that God's called you to be.
Man, Derek, that is wonderful. I love that. That is awesome, man, because it's absolutely true. And I love the spin on it of thanking. So you've served your purpose now. Now, how, you know, I would think about what one of those the Englishmen or king would say, depart from me now. you depart. I love it. Yeah. You know, Derek, this has been wonderful, man, but it's time for our infamous man up questions. And Derek, these are just five quick questions started with the letters M-A-N-U-P, and all they require is your fearless honesty. We haven't lost a man yet, so I think you'll survive it. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
All right. And guys, we'll be right back with my guest today, Derek Stone, after this short break.
Let's face it, life is hard. You know what I mean. You want to win at work, but you're struggling to survive at home. You want to make your wife happy, but you have your own personal demons you have to battle with every single day. Trying to provide for your family financially, and at the same time, not knowing exactly how to protect and lead them spiritually. But do you know the only thing that's harder than trying to succeed as a man? Is when you're trying to do it alone. That's why at Real Men Connect, we're offering to do life with you. We have a unique and private program called the Real Men 300 that's designed to help you win at what matters most to you. Like having a personal relationship with God, having a stronger marriage, leading your family well, winning and living your God-given purpose at work, and leaving a legacy that will matter in eternity. In the Real Men 300, we promise you three things. One, you will never have to do life alone again. Two, you won't ever get left behind, no matter how much you're struggling. And three, not only will you learn how to win as a man, you'll learn how to lead other men to victory as well. Guaranteed. However, you can't just join the Real Men 300. You have to apply because we screen every man and space is limited in this private and exclusive brotherhood. So to find out more and to see if you qualify, just go to realmen300.com. Because life's not easy, but it can get better when you choose to do it together with men you can trust who won't judge you but will hold you accountable and encourage you as a man. So apply today at realmen300.com. That's realmen300.com.
Welcome back, Mighty Men of God. I'm with my guest, Derek Stone, who's the author of Why Should I Forgive? And he's ready to tackle the man up questions. And like I said, Derek, they're just five questions, but we're going to put it around for the most part around forgiveness, and we're going to ask you a ministry question too as well. And so let's start with the letter M in man, which is mistake. When it comes to now in hindsight, as you look back, what was the biggest mistake that you learned the most from as a man when it pertains to forgiveness?
Know that you're human, and humans make mistakes. God doesn't always give you the power to make a right choice. It says, Andy Andrews says, but he does give you the power to make a choice and then make it right. So, I beat myself up a lot. and even today I still, but I have to fire my self-critic and hire him back as a coach. A coach is with you in the bad times and the good times and the training times. And when you fire your self-critic that eats you alive, like you're no good, you're not good enough, you're worthless, you have to take, and I personally, what I do is I like, thank you for sharing, or I'll say, you know, bump that. What do I need to do? You know, and then it starts coming like, you need to do this, this, and this in the future. Okay, cool. Let's solve that problem. I'll write that down and I'll either make a system or something. And this is a lot of that relates to business decisions, but you know, I beat myself a lot when I don't pay attention to detail. So beat myself up. I don't beat myself. I beat myself up. Sorry. so yeah.
Yeah. Know that you're human. Yeah. That's good. Now, Derek, obviously with the circles that you now, the people that you shared your story with in writing the book and everything, you've now encountered and run across a lot of men and women, but we're particularly focused on the men. Based on the men that you've run into, that you've conversed with, you shared your testimony with, the A stands for attitude. If you could change one attitude in men when it comes to forgiveness, what would it be?
I would say just the stubbornness to be right, because our pride is what kills us in this forgiveness arena. You know, Brené Brown, she says that, you know, true vulnerability leads to joy. And to me, joy is a sword, and on either side of it's a double-edged sword. On either side of joy the sort of joy, I call it, is happiness on one side and gratitude on the other. And so when you're grateful, you can't be a grateful, happy person if you're bitter, angry, and resentful. And so gratitude, happiness, two sides of the same sort of joy.
Now, isn't that interesting, though, Derek, as you think about that? You know, we all, quote, I'm putting in air quotes, want to be happy. Or basically what I think is more important than being happy is having joy. But it is impossible for you to walk in joy and in peace with bitterness and resentment at the same time. It is impossible. So if anything, that should be an incentive of why we should change our hearts and want to forgive and put down our pride. You know, I often say that if you swallow your pride, I haven't seen one man choke yet swallowing his pride.
You know, so, that's good.
You know, so that's good. Go ahead and swallow it. Now, the N stands for next. And this is the ministry question I wanted to ask you. You know, based on now what you're doing now and how you're trying to help people heal by forgiving some of the people in their past and moving forward with their lives, what's the next big thing you would do? The N stands for next. What's the next big thing you would do for God if you knew you couldn't fail?
I would love to take this book, and we've been working on a workbook that we want to take and do a 2-day course. So like say 6 o'clock on a Friday and go till like 9 or 10. And then on a Saturday, go from like 10 to 5 or 6 in the evening, in the afternoon, and just really digest each one of these points in our book, in my book, and talk about really how to usher in the life change for them, where they can go in and they can fill in the blanks, and just like a 2-day conference, basically, where I lead people through this to have a maximum impact. But so yeah, that would be the big point of where I think if I couldn't fail, that I would be doing that.
Now, has that just been a thought, or you've been really serious about doing that?
Oh, I've been serious about it. We've got the outline for the workbook already, and I'm just waiting on the phone to ring.
what call are you waiting for?
I don't know. That's the thing, is like, you know, it's one of those things when so many people say, you know, they're waiting on God. Well, God's waiting on you sometimes. And for me, that was getting this book out and getting on the podcast to promote the book and praying that, because God does so many things when you get out of the way and you just start moving and taking action. He's going to see that and then start opening some doors up, and some doors are opening already. And I'm super excited about it, to see what the rest of the doors open for. I can actually develop this deal.
Well, I love asking that question, Derek, and I'm going to even put myself on the hook publicly. Cause something jumped in my spirit when you mentioned a 2-day course, cause I'm hearing that, wow, you're talking about a 2-day course on forgiveness and healing. We're going to stay connected, man. I would love to see whatever I can do to help you with that. I'm putting myself out there right now, knowing I don't have a lot of time to do a lot of stuff, but I just feel for something in my spirit is telling me this is necessary, what he's doing. And I haven't heard anything similar to it to know about anybody doing something like that. But I think that is a great idea. So we're going to definitely keep in contact, because real men connect. So we're going to stay in contact, but let me finish this up, man. So now the U stands for understand, Derek. And when you were younger, what was the one thing you didn't understand about being a man, but you understand better now?
What it takes to be a man, it takes being strong, but it takes being vulnerable. It takes being dangerous, but collected. It takes being wise, not stupid. And it means seeking wisdom. When you don't know what you're doing, go reach out to some people that do. You know, and setting an example, know that you're always being watched. I mean, you're always being watched. That's a big part of a man. You know, you can't, whatever you do in the shadows will find you out. Sin will always find you out. And so,
Amen. That's right. You can't. Yeah. I tell people, I say, if you're going to try to bury something, you better make sure it's dead, because it has, it's like a zombie. It'll come right back, like from a horror movie. You're like, I thought I killed that.
10 years from now, man, it'll come back.
So you didn't kill me. I'm still alive.
That's right.
So now here's the last question. And this starts with the letter P, and it stands for problem. Now, as a mighty man of God, and obviously you're going through a lot of healing yourself and a lot of self-reflection and learning. But what problem in your life do you still struggle with as a man, even today, Darren?
Communication. As a man, I struggle with communication with my people. I think they understand and they may not. And so then they call my wife, and then my wife has so she's my translator sometimes. So where she breaks it down on a basic level, I'm always, for some reason, I'm always like the 60,000 feet level, and the people just don't get it because they're at the first foot level, you know, they're in the front line. So it's always hard for me, because then I'll say something and I'll bark out some orders, and then they'll all call her and say, what did he say, dude? You know, so I'm like, did I not explain it? So sometimes that's breaking down communication to be more effective communicator. So.
Well, Derek, you did a great job, man. That was awesome. Thanks for being so transparent and honest and vulnerable with us. I really appreciate it. And can you believe it, Derek? We've come to the end of our show. But man, don't you worry about it, because you know we've reached the end of our show, but we're going to do it all again next week with new guests, with new insights, new lessons. So make sure you don't miss it. But I want to take this moment to thank my guest, Derek Stone, for joining us today and being so gracious with his time. Derek, thank you so much, man, for taking time out of your busy schedule to share with us today, man. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Joe. Thanks for having me.
And Derek, we mentioned your book, but quickly for our listeners, if they wanted to find out more about you, your ministry, your book, or what you're working on and this course you would like to put into play, what is the best way for them to reach out to you and connect with you? What's the quickest way for them to do that?
Go to DerekStone.online, and that's DerekStone.online. My Facebook links are there, Instagram links are there, and you can check the story out, and you can even grab a copy of the book. So as of this recording, it will be out on Kindle June 1st. So I don't know when this recording is going to air, but yeah, it'll be live at the point.
All right. And so that's Derek Stone. That's Derek with a K, D-E-R-E-K Stone.online. Is that correct, Derek?
Yes, sir.
And what we'll do is we'll put your contact information and some of your social media handles in the show notes. So they'll have that, so they can click on it whenever they want to reach out to you. But guys, make sure you do that. Like you said, his book is not out yet, but it's on its way. He's already written it. And I can't wait to read it, Derek, when it does come out, because I think this is a topic that a lot of men struggle with. So again, thank you again for joining us on the show. And for you guys out there listening, please do us a favor. And this is huge. This is so important. Take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program for us. It's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. So please don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. So until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with realmenconnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man that God has called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in God's grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.